Welcome to a Tales from the South encore presentation. From January of 2013, here's Tin Roof Project number 28 with Mark Landon Smith.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by the Salty Dogs? Do y'all like the Salty Dogs? Hailing from Little Rock, Arkansas, the Salty Dogs have shared the stage with Willie Nelson, Kinky Friedman, Hank Williams Jr., the Old Crow Medicine Show, and Junior Brown, among others. The Salty Dogs have received kudos from Deke Dickerson to Jason Ringenberg, and their music has been featured on the TLC network hit show Trading Spaces. They have CDs for sale after the show, and more can be heard at thesaltydogs.net. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to a very special edition of Tales from the South, a monthly series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, all right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. And I'm your host, Paula Morrell. On my left here strumming is 1931 National Resonator is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark was a featured house guitarist at the late bluesman Junior Kimbrough's Juke Joint in Tullahoma, Mississippi. He wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? Y'all like our set? These genuine screen doors from the Arkansas Delta with mixed media portraiture are by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox from her Images of the American South collection. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. More can be seen at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern style storytelling? Mark Landon Smith is a writer, actor, and director based in Fayetteville, Arkansas. As playwright, he has had 9 scripts published by Samuel French and 1 by Contemporary Drama Service. His work is produced throughout the world and includes 2 foreign translations, an off-Broadway production, and a film adaptation. He is a 2012 AATE Distinguished Play nominee, and his scripts, Assistant Needed, and Billie Jean Is Not My Lover, received top honors at the 2006 and 2008 24-hour playoff. His comedy short film, DuPont, Mississippi, F5, for which he wrote the screenplay, co-produced, and co-directed, was featured at the New York International Independent Film Festival in Los Angeles. He introduced Splash Theater to the region with his script, MetMyMatch.com, and is a contributing author of the humor book, Dear Elvis, Graffiti from Graceland, and a contributor to Stage Directions magazine. As actor, Mark has appeared with Tidal Theater Company, Tsunami Radio Theater, Theater Squared, Boar's Head Players, McCoy Repertory Theater, Ceramic Cow Productions, Circuit Playhouse, Gaslight Theater, and others. Film and television credits include Experiment 519, Frog's Hair, For Kids' Sake, the really terrible cable series Simple Pleasures, and most recently, the feature film Gordon Family Tree, which completed filming in October. Mark has directed over 60 stage productions and has written 15 commissioned scripts for various theaters throughout the country. He is a frequent guest teaching artist in playwriting, directing, and acting, and team teaches comedy improv at the Comedy College. Mark has also taught at Tulsa University, Mid-South College, and the University of Arkansas. Currently, he is the executive director of Arts Live Theater, co-founder of Ceramic Cow Productions, co-director and team member of Funbags Comedy Improv, and co-director of the Arkansas Playwrights Workshop for Theater Squared. Mark currently is writing a humorous observation book entitled Mr. Fancy Pants and is in development for the web comedy sketch series Jules and Mark. Tonight, Mark takes us back to his childhood and the discovery of a family secret in the son of Miss Sharon. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Landon Smith.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you and good evening. Good evening. So how many of you remember a show called Romper Room?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to be reading a story from my book that I'm working on, Mr. Fancy Pants. And I hope that this will bring back some memories for some of you. This story is called The Son of Miss Sharon. My family had a secret. A secret never spoken of, never acknowledged. A secret which remained buried in our attic, accidentally uncovered the summer of my 15th year. And once the discovery had been made, our family was never the same. I am blessed with exceptional parents. I cannot imagine parents loving their child more, nor a child loving their parents more than I do mine. They have always encouraged taking chances, following your heart, not living life thinking could've, should've, would've. Better to try and fail than not try at all. If you've learned something, you haven't failed. The glass is always half full. You cannot control your circumstances, but you can control your attitude. Regrets are a waste of time. Look forward and never behind. Valuable lessons which I have applied to my life, and they have served me well. They also insisted on honesty, full disclosure. I thought I knew everything there was to know about my parents, but no, I did not. In the crowded, musty attic of our ranch-style home in which I was raised, sat the ultimate grandmother's trunk, metal and wood, gold-covered, covered with tiny rivets, and inside a vast selection of treasures. Nana, my father's mother, kept a trunk of remembrances. Nana, who let me as a child decorate her house for Christmas to my heart's tacky content. Nana, who dipped rooster snuff and kept the souvenir glass that it came in. Remember that? Nana, who kept our family history alive within this trunk. Alive with souvenirs from foreign shores when my uncle served in World War II. Pictures of my father standing in front of the Statue of Liberty in his service uniform in 1958. Report cards, letters, a pair of dolls purchased in Turkey, a pocketbook purchased in Africa. A menu from my father's high school Halloween program in which sliced potatoes were called pirate's coins. I loved this trunk, and it was within its deep recesses the family secret was revealed. I made this discovery, as most are made, quite by accident. One day in my rummaging for the umpteenth time, I came across a hitherto hidden cubby, the top of which was covered with a colorful graphic of a cherub. As I brushed my hand across its top, it moved. And lifting the top, there it was. Still in the original packaging, five finger puppets. And on the package itself, a red and yellow logo which read, Romper Room. Romper Room was a female-hosted educational television program for children which enjoyed the peak of popularity during the 1960s and 70s. During the half-hour broadcast, children would be taught the importance of good hygiene, being helpful, being kind, etiquette. Then exhausted, everyone would break for a snack. I had vague memories of watching Romper Room as a child. I recalled a mirror, romper stompers, the kids marching in a circle singing about how good they were going to be that day. As I gazed upon the finger puppets, I assumed it was a present my parents had forgotten to give either my brother or myself, and if so, I wanted what was due to me. I showed my find to my mother. "Where did you find this?" she asked, taking the package from me. "In the attic," I explained. "Do you know where it came from?" My mother grew mysteriously quiet, paused, then smiled. "Yes, I do." She then took out an old family photo album, one I had somehow missed as I loved flipping through these old albums to gaze at pictures of relatives I had never met and who were long dead. This album was filled with black and white pictures from my parents' childhood. My mother in high school looking every inch the stereotypical 1950s teenager. My father looking very dapper in his high school senior class picture. And a newspaper clipping and picture of my mother circa 1966, sporting a Jackie Kennedy-style Dior suit. In one hand was a doobie, in the other, a magic mirror. "What's this?" I asked. "That's me when I was on Romper Room," she said casually. "Huh?" I thought. It took a few minutes for the significance of her statement to sink in. My mother, the woman who had made me mow the lawn, who made cupcakes resembling Easter egg baskets for my third grade class, the woman who dressed as a fortune teller for my elementary school fall carnival, and when I went to see her in her fortune teller's tent and recognized her, later denied it was her. The woman who was none too pleased when I came home with a D in math on my fourth grade report card. The woman who taught me how to count to 10 in Spanish. This woman, my mother, had been Miss Sharon on television's Romper Room. What? Now, even after I made this discovery, I failed to fully appreciate its importance. It wasn't until years later, when I would casually mention the fact to others, that I began to realize the impact Romper Room and Miss Sharon had on an entire generation of children. People were stunned with the news. And I began to appreciate how the children of a famous parent feels. I could now understand and relate to Suri Cruz, the children of David Beckham and Victoria Posh Spice Beckham, and Liza Minnelli. To many, my mother might as well have been Madonna or Cher. We all have moments in our childhood which make a strong, indelible impression, and Romper Room was one such moment for an entire generation. 25 years after Romper Room, Miss Sharon and I were out shopping. We were looking at some clothing and wanted to try something on, but the dressing room was at the opposite end of the building. When one of the clerks refused to let us use the dressing room without supervision, fearing we'd steal the merchandise, the other clerk, recognizing my mother, said, "No, it's okay. That's Miss Sharon." So fast forward several years later, I'm working with the comedy improv group Funbags. I act as an MC, direct, and am a team player. Now, during the crowd warm-up, I sometimes mention my mother was Romper Room's Miss Sharon, which never fails to elicit an audible gasp and some applause. After one performance, a man comes up and introduces himself and asks, "Was your mother really Miss Sharon on Romper Room?" "She certainly was." "That's amazing," he said in obvious awe. "I loved that show as a child. I'd watch it every day hoping she'd say my name in the magic mirror, but she never did." "Excuse me," I said. I stepped away and called my mother, and giving her the gentleman's name, tapping the gentleman on the shoulder, I gave him the phone. "Miss Sharon wants to talk to you." He was visibly shaking as he took the phone. "Hello," he said timidly. And without saying hello in return, I could hear my mother say, "Romper, stomper, bumper, boo. Tell me, tell me, tell me do. Magic mirror, tell me today. Have all my friends had fun at play?" And she said his name. Tears welled up in this gentleman's face. He was barely able to say thank you as he hung up the phone. And his hand still shaking, through his now steady flow of tears, he whispered, "Miss Sharon said my name." And with that, I left him alone, his shoulders shaking, choking with emotion. And later in the evening, still weeping, I overheard him on his telephone telling someone, "You will not believe what happened tonight." Thank you.
So thank you so much, Mark Landon Smith, for being on the Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. In your story, it was in Nanaw's trunk, metal and wood, gold-colored, covered with tiny rivets, and inside a vast selection of treasures, where you found the family secret.
That's true.
So what's happened to the trunk? Do you still have the trunk?
We actually do still have the trunk. The trunk is in the guest bedroom upstairs at my parents' house, the contents of which, I don't know exactly where the contents are. I think the two Turkish dolls are in the library, and I have the pocketbook in my trunk at my house. And we have it in what we call the Eleanor Roosevelt room of our house. And just because we feel like if Eleanor Roosevelt came, that's where she would want to spend the night. So,
Just in case.
Right? It's filled with antiques and some lace doilies, and you think Eleanor Roosevelt when you see it. So it's very Eleanor Roosevelt-esque. Yes. It's still a part of our family. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Your Nana, who dipped rooster snuff and kept the souvenir dinner glass it came in, sounds great. And so, are there stories about her that you remember, either when she was younger or older?
Yeah, absolutely. She passed away when I was 23, so she's been gone for about a year.
This is radio, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. It's like, man, he looks terrible for 24. But no, I have a lot of great memories of Nana. They were older by the time I was born. And she was a homemaker, a professional homemaker. And after my grandfather passed away, I recall, because she lived next door, so I'd spend the night with her. And they had two twin beds that were side by side and a little dresser between them. And every night, before we'd fall asleep, she'd reach out and hold my hand across the bed, and I could audibly hear her praying underneath her breath. And I just really, really glom onto that and really remember that. Mm. Also, another memory is when I was shooting fireworks off in front of her house, and her and my grandfather, who was still alive at the time, were out there watching us shoot firecrackers and whatnot. And I shot a bottle rocket up her dress.
Oh.
And I didn't know she was that good of a dancer. some really, really wonderful memories of Grandma. She was, Nana was, you're just your stereotypical Nana. She was totally devoted to her grandchildren, and she hated cats, so I didn't know this, so I got her a cat, which ended up being very feral and living in her backyard for years. So, I miss my Nana.
My question that I'm intrigued with, and some of y'all may have thought of this, did Miss Sharon ever say your name in the magic mirror?
Miss Sharon did not say my name in the magic mirror, because I was only barely probably a year old by the time she was done, because it was like 65 when she was on television, for a very brief period of time. My brother was the stunt kid, so he's 3 years older than I am, so if one kid dropped out, he got to go in their place. But I never, I don't know if I've created this memory or if it's a real memory, but I have this memory in my head of being at the studio and my Nana and Papa sitting in folding metal chairs against the wall and all these cords, and I'm crawling among the cords. That was safe. And and I can see off in the distance in the corner a lit studio. And I was thinking maybe I just made this up, but then I have a cousin who has very firm memories of Nana's house when they were living in Missouri. And she was only like a year and a half old, but she still had these very vivid memories. We thought, maybe I didn't make that up, but maybe I did. So, yeah.
We have a few minutes left here at the end for audience questions.
As an ardent fan and viewer of Romper Room, I was just wondering whether Miss Sharon had kept any of the artifacts from the show, kind of like the mirror?
I'm sensing you're thinking eBay or something is why you're asking. The only thing that we have, which is very precious to me, we have 25 of the original scripts still, which we actually sent to Las Vegas when they were having the muscular dystrophy thing, and they were framed and offered for auction, and they didn't sell. But I think that the Miss Romper Room is a generational thing. Yeah, and it's a very specific moment in time for a lot of us, and you have to be of a certain age to really understand and appreciate what Miss Romper Room was, and that whole Mr. Rogers and Captain Kangaroo, that whole genre. So we do have some of the scripts, and I made Mother autograph each one of them because I'm thinking eBay too. I'm not stupid. And I think I had her sign it to my favorite doobie, Miss Sharon. So. So that's the only thing we have left. I wish I still had those finger puppets which I totally destroyed because in the original packaging, those would be worth quite a bit by now, but no.
Mark, was there a particular person or event that got you expanding your talents outside the Fayetteville area, across the United States, and even beyond that? So,
Probably when my first play came out 20 years ago, and that put suddenly things on a national platform. By at that point, I'd just been kind of regional. And then when those plays started being translated into foreign languages, then it kind of kicked it up another notch as far as the international. And one of my plays was translated into Dutch, which really surprised me because my work is very Southern and extremely colloquial. And I was talking to the publisher in Amsterdam, and he said, well, we have white trash in the Netherlands too. And, you know. So that made me feel better. And I've always thought of Dutch. If you've ever seen the Muppets with the Dutch chef on there? Swedish chef. That's kind of what it sounds like, you know? It's not that far. And like one of the lines in my script was, in English, we have work to do. And the Dutch translation was, we hebben werken te doen. So I was like, I speak Dutch. I don't know. Well, I can read it better than I can speak it, apparently. But so, yeah, those things have helped. Push things up into a, you know, an international level. Yeah.
Would love to know what you're working on now.
I've got a lot of balls in the air as always. I have three scripts out now, looking for a home for publishers. I've gone into because as a writer, I'm. Quite honestly, I'm economically motivated. I want to write something that's going to sell. I'm not trying to write the Great American Play. So right now, I'm focusing on doing adaptations of these really terrible 1950s and early 60s teen exploitation science fiction movies, which is a huge market because I have my last play that was published last year is Teenagers from Outer Space, which was a terrible movie made in 1959, which was in the public domain. So I took it and adapted it and kind of and tweaked it a little bit. But it's got a built-in title for marketability, Teenagers in Outer Space. I mean, and then Night of the Living Dead, that movie, public domain. So I've done an adaptation of that. So I've got those things out there right now. I've got in development a YouTube sketch comedy series called Mark and Jules, and we just found a producer for that. So that goes into production in a couple of months. And then Fun Bags Comedy Improv is still continuing. I'm always producing with Arts Life Theater. We just finished Beauty and the Beast. We've got Separate Piece coming up, Little Mermaid. There's just an enormous amount going on. but it's, you know, it's great. Certainly do love it.
And didn't I read that you're also doing a one-man show, a David Sedaris?
I am. If you're familiar with David Sedaris, the Santaland Diaries, it was really the essay that pushed him over the top on NPR. And it's about David Sedaris when he first moved to New York at 41 or something. The only job he could find was working as an elf at Macy's Santaland. So that was turned into a one-man show, and I'm doing that starting December 13th, 14th, and 15th just for three performances. So. That's going to be in Fayetteville with Ceramic Cow Productions, which is the company that I own. So, you know, we have a habit of putting me on stage and doing a lot of my plays. You know, why not? So,
all right. So how about our story and storyteller tonight? Thank you so much, Mark Landon Smith, for being on our Tin Roof Project here on Tales from the South. More can be found out about Mark at marklandonsmith.com. Thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. Good night, everybody.
All about the judgment day, telling us how rock and roll will never stay. steady plagues. Bless us all for heaven's sakes. I'll say a long prayer tonight and I hope it takes. Shout it out, brother. Sing that hillside tune. Shout it out, sister.
Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman Public Library. Additional support provided by the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, AY Magazine, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, and the Oxford American. Live sound and studio assistance provided by Infrared Studio in North Little Rock. More at InfraredStudioProductions.com. Our bluesman is Mark Simpson. Our stage art is by V.L. Cox. Our production engineer is Jay Jones. And our executive producer and host is Paula Morrell. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern-style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.